Welcome to The Creative Shift. My name is Dan Blank, author of the book Be the Gateway and founder of WeGrowMedia.com. Okay, so this week I want to talk about the idea of perfection versus progress. And this can be within the context of what you create, the core craft of your writing or your art or your music, but it can also be in relation to sharing, marketing, author platform, all of that. And I think that this discussion is going to bleed into really important areas like imposter syndrome, these things, these fears that we have that can be completely irrational, but they hold us back. They stop us from creating. They stop us from publishing. They stop us from sharing. So last week, I sent out my newsletter, and this is something I've done every single week for 15 years. And after I sent it out, one of the readers emailed me and let me know, "Hey Dan, there's a typo in your newsletter." And it's right in the first line of the newsletter. Now, this is the thing that, and it's funny because the line of the email was, "Too often when writers think of marketing, they cringe." But instead of the word "think," I wrote "thing." So of course, reading back on that now, not just that I had a typo, the fact it was in the first line of an email, you know, it makes me cringe. It's one of these things that, you know, once you see it, you can't unsee it. But of course, I wrote it and I edited it. And I tested it, and I changed it, and I tested it again, and I sent it out, and I missed it. And to me, this taps into a lot of stuff I want to talk about, but it really relates to that idea of when I work with a writer, or I talk to a writer, and I see that they hesitate. They don't want to get on social media just yet. They don't want to really dig into marketing their book. They're nervous about reaching out to people. Sometimes there are elements that's a confidence issue, and confidence is a very, very complex and multifaceted thing. But it all comes down to this hesitation. And reflecting on it this week, you know, what do they fear? They fear that typo. And it's not that they fear specifically typos, but they fear making a simple rookie mistake and doing so right at the start. You know, they do all this work. Like, I did all this work to write that piece, to spend 15 years building that list and building reputation, and there's the typo right in the first line. It just feels like it can undercut 15 years of work. And that's what they fear. They fear their own version of that. They fear that they're going to send, they're going to pitch at the wrong time. They're going to put the wrong subject line. They're going to say the wrong thing in social media. They're going to do something that will upset their publisher or something. So their inclination is to hold back, to do nothing or to do less. And, you know, if I think about, well, gee, when I think of that typo, you know, what is my fear? What is that simple mistake that we try to avoid? What does it represent? So for me, it could be that the reader is getting that newsletter, seeing the typo in the first line and thinking, "Oh my gosh, this guy's a hack." Or thinking, "Wow, if his standards are this low for editing, how good can his consulting really be? Like, why would someone hire him if this is the low standards, even for his own creative work, where you assume he puts the most effort even?" Or, you know, goodness, Dan, you know, people pay you for this high-end, detail-oriented approach, and this is the typo. This is obviously the quality that I can expect from you. Or the very obvious thing, the thing I'm always aware of, which is, Dan, your audience is writers, people who appreciate the craft of the written word. And if this is your audience, you'd better take your own writing a lot more seriously or find a new industry to work in. So these are the kinds of things that I could think about if I thought of, "Oh, why am I upset about the typo? Why do I not want to have a typo? What could that typo represent? And honestly, what are the ramifications of that typo? Everything I just said is real. Everything I just said is totally rational that someone could see that, think that, and it could really have an outsized effect on my reputation, on my business, on my livelihood, and really also on the things that I really care about. I love working with writers and the work that I do. So I only want to be doing that. So thinking that such a simple mistake could put that at risk is, of course, not what I want to feel. And this is the thing with imposter syndrome. It's that these fears are real. They're rational. They totally make sense. But I think there's a flip side to it as well. So this past weekend, I watched a documentary with my son about the 1960s quote-unquote battle between the motor companies Ford and Ferrari. Short story is, and there was, I know there was a very famous movie just made about this, where Ferrari was winning the Le Mans race year after year, and Ford then tried to challenge them. And what's interesting as the documentary featured the two companies was how they really showed that, you know, Ferrari, in the engineering and design and style side, everything was at the highest level of perfection. That they had just worked really hard, and my understanding is continued to work really hard, to just have no mistakes in that area. And as a casual viewer of a movie like this, it's so easy to watch that and think, yeah, that's the way to be. In my career, with my craft, with my work, I want to be Ferrari. I want to have the highest standards. I want my quote-unquote factory to be this immaculate place, to look like it's, you know, some futuristic thing. It doesn't look like what we think of as a factory at all. And I want there to be no mistakes. When we find a mistake, we shout about the mistake because we're never going to make it again, because that is our standard. Like, I feel like in many ways we all want to think that, because it means that we care about our craft. We care about our audience. We care about all the facets of that process, because we do this for purpose. We do this for a mission. We do it for joy. And that typo, or if you're listening to this, whatever your own version of that typo is, it's a reminder of how these simple mistakes can not only risk the things that we love most, it's also a reminder that, oh my gosh, it's really hard to have Ferrari-level standards with things. And it can really even set in, I think, again, it sets into place the whole idea of imposter syndrome, but it can really take a knock to confidence and to self-esteem. Because, and I think this is a very unfortunate thing that happens very often, is that people would take that typo and internalize it. And I don't want to do that. I don't like having had made that typo, and there's no way to undo that. I have not yet looked at my unsubscribe rate from last week, but in my head, I'm already like, dude, expect it to be high. But I'm also saying, you know what? It is what it is. I made the mistake. I will now be more aware of it in the future. I'm going to do a podcast and an essay about it. But that typo is not my biggest concern. And I want to talk about why. And this is the other side of perfection versus progress. It's the other side of imposter syndrome. It's the other side of not letting small mistakes hold you back from creating, hold you back from publishing, or hold you back from sharing. My work, the work that I do with writers, it's about having really good ideas. It's about having radical clarity about what we create and the impact it can have in the world or in someone's life. It's about establishing processes that allow you to create more and share better, but do so in a way that feels fulfilling to who you are as a writer or a creator. And it is about connecting. It is about connecting your work to real people in a way that creates a career or an experience that you really want to have. This is what I love doing. This is my gift. And this is what I spend all of my time working on during the week. I am working with writers in the trenches doing this. The newsletter is something, like I've said, I've spent 15 years doing this every week, and I have really resisted creating a system around that because I love the visceral nature of every week having to come up with a new idea, of pushing myself to, for my own internal creative process, of pushing myself to what I consider the edge, of having a new idea, of sharing something that I'm thinking about or working on with a writer right now. And within a 7-day period, coming up with that idea, outlining that idea, doing a rough draft, fleshing it out to a full draft, going through a series of edits, putting it into a newsletter program, proofing it again, and clicking send, all while doing that work and then knowing I've got to do it again the next week and do it again for the next 15 years every week. And the newsletter goes out to thousands of people, so I'm not unaware of the responsibility of that too. That these are people who have asked me to be in their life, and that I do want to live up to their expectation. So I write these quote-unquote live every week. And honestly, for all the systems that I create for writers and for myself, this is one area that I love for it to feel live. Very often, I won't have the idea for Friday's newsletter until Tuesday or Wednesday. I have a whole bank of ideas. I can talk about that in another post of how I do that. But I'll often outline it maybe Wednesday, write part of it Thursday, and write the bulk of it on Friday morning. I'm an early riser. This newsletter goes out around 7 a.m. That means that a lot of Fridays I am waking up at 5:30. I like waking up early. I know that's unusual. And I wake up knowing that I'm on deadline, and that the piece is half written. So this is where the typo comes from. This is where a lot of simple grammatical errors in my newsletter come from. I am absolutely guilty of that. They happen. They've happened in the past, and they will happen in the future. And I'm okay with that to a certain degree, because it's my hope that that's not why you read my work. You're not reading it because I have had editors comb over it so it is perfect. You're reading me because you like my ethos when it comes to platform and marketing. You read my work because I'm introducing you to new ideas or new systems, or I'm reminding you of how to blend that creative side of what you do with the promotional side of what you do in a way that feels fulfilling. That's kind of why I assume people follow me. In the past, I've absolutely tried different ways of having this. I've tried to do it where, let me write a week ahead. That way, if by Monday the essay is already written, I can send it to an editor and a proofreader, and by Wednesday they've sent it back. I still have 2 more days to edit it. And I just didn't enjoy that. I enjoyed, like I said, the visceral nature of being on deadline. I don't know why that is. I have to assume it's why a musician or performer loves going on stage, why a stand-up comedian loves performing in front of a live audience. I don't know why that is, but I've learned over these years that I do enjoy that. There's something fun about it. There's something that makes me feel alive. There's something that pushes me creatively. And trying to put a system around that so that I can avoid typos, that I can avoid triggering imposter syndrome, it doesn't work for me. And that's something that I think each of us have to learn about our own creative process. And as we get into creating systems around how we share and publish, it's the same type of a thing. There's not one best practice. There's not one right way to do it. You have to find out what works for you. And what works for you will have imperfections in a way that maybe Ferraris don't. I've written recently about how I've been going through a creative reset. And this is something I do every year. And I just kind of analyze what I do, what I want to be doing more of. And then I'll analyze my website, social media, all that sort of stuff. And then in December and January, I'm really working on executing that. So one thing that I've had in my list in as I work through it in November and December was, gosh, it's been a little while since I've updated the testimonials on my website. As you may know, the work I do is I work full-time working one-on-one with writers. That's how I spend my week. Gives me total, complete, and utter joy. We're often working on book launches, on developing an author platform, on finding clarity in how one communicates what they create and why, and of course, all the little things about outreach and promotion and marketing ideas, all of that stuff. So I started reaching out to some of the authors I've worked with in last year, in 2020. And it's been astounding. It's a great exercise, first of all, obviously, because you're asking people to summarize the work that they've done with you and what it meant to them. And I've got back a lot of amazing new testimonials that I can be adding to my website, which feels great. It's a way of optimizing and resetting that. It's also an incredible reminder of what I do and why I do it. And why I'm talking about this is it's something I try to keep in mind when I'm confronted with a mistake that I made, like the typo in the first line of a newsletter. I want to share just an excerpt from two of them. One, because, yeah, I'm proud of these. There's no doubt about it that I received these back and I got emotional because I just couldn't believe that these people wrote this. Because it's not often that we get to hear that about our work. We have to read between the lines or someone says something nice in the context of something else. But when you get back a testimonial from someone you have just an incredible amount of respect for, you just feel like it's a privilege to know them. It's pretty incredible. So one, I'd recommend you do that for any work that you do. And I think having a yearly schedule feels really reasonable. Obviously, you can do it on a monthly or quarterly basis if you want, but this has been really amazing for me. So I want to share two. One is from a New York Times bestselling fiction and memoir writer. And the first line of it is, "Working with Dan Blank has been one of the best investments I've made in myself as a writer." And then she goes on to describe exactly where she was when we started working together, where she was when we finished working together, and the specifics of what it is about our work and my process that worked for her. And that blew me away. That author is Jasmine Darznik, who has a new book coming out this year. And she's just incredible. I mean, just her work is incredible. The way she goes about it is incredible. So to see that written down and so broad as well, just blew me away. The other one is from a nonfiction memoir writer, Sarah Hayes Coomer, who I believe I've written about as well, who, again, her work is just incredible. And the first line of this one is, "Working with Dan changed my life and work forever." And again, it's one of those lines that it's ridiculous for me to read. It's ridiculous for me to read it out loud on the podcast. It's ridiculous even to read it in my own mind. And then she goes on in the same way, describing what we did and why it was powerful for her. And this is one of the things I do to remind myself of what my work really is and what I need to double down on and how I can kind of forgive these simple mistakes like a typo. I really hope that I don't have a typo in my next newsletter and the one after that and the one after that. And yeah, I'm gonna read a little more closely, especially the first line of the newsletter. But I also don't want to get lost in those weeds because I've just talked to too many writers and too many creators in my life who have that typo. And then they go from a weekly newsletter to bi-weekly to quarterly to twice a year to never. They use that as the example, the reminder that gee, maybe it's too risky to share. Maybe it's too risky to create. And I don't want to miss the forest for the trees. This idea that I am always striving for improving my craft and getting better results for my clients and having more experiences with writers. And while spelling things correctly is definitely a part of that, it is the smaller part of that. The bigger part of that is helping these writers move ahead with their careers. It's giving them really fun, innovative, fulfilling marketing ideas. It's creating systems for them. It's all the different things that are on my website. And when I play at the other end of that in my free newsletter, in my free podcast, no, I don't want them to have basic mistakes for all the reasons I said earlier about, you know, imposter syndrome, because it can reflect on me, my standards, quality of work, all of that. But I'm also not going to let that stop me from creating. I'm not going to let it make me hesitate from creating and sharing. Because those fears are what really stop us. We often look at, I see these all the time, these trend articles. You know, this is the new risk to writers and to musicians and artists. And those things are true. But I often find that most often, the thing that's going to stop us from creating and sharing is ourselves. We're going to not reach out to people because we're afraid of bugging them. We're not going to publish because we feel we're not quite ready yet. We're not going to send out a newsletter because we fear we're going to make a rookie mistake that undercuts the brand we hope people think about for us. And while those things are absolutely rational, they don't always mean that you shouldn't create, shouldn't publish, and shouldn't share. And to get around this, or tactics to work through it, is to make the work iterative. I can be doing another round of proofing on my newsletter, which I will be doing. There's all kinds of tricks, you know, that I've read about as well. You know, read the first paragraph backwards, that sort of thing. But you can also make things feel safer for yourself. If you're someone who wants to be reaching out to podcasts or pitching or doing outreach, hey, that first email you send or the first three, make them to people who you know already, who you know will say yes before you send it out to people who you're maybe more nervous about. If you're nervous about a new website you want to make for yourself, make the first one really simple, really quote unquote good enough, and then improve it slowly over time. If you're not sure about your social media strategy, start small and safe. At least start with something. If you want to create a newsletter and you're nervous about who to send it to or what to share, start by sending it to one person who will likely be a spouse, relative, or friend. I mean, my newsletter started out 15 years ago. I sent it to nine people that I knew, that I worked with. I walked up to each of them one by one, said, hey, this idea for a newsletter about da-da-da-da-da, is it okay if I send you the first issue? So I got permission by walking in front of them and asking permission, and it felt safe because these were people I knew. I chose those nine people because I knew them, and I liked them, and I thought they might be interested. Should my newsletters have typos? Nope, they shouldn't. And I hope they don't in the future, but in the back of my mind, I know they probably will. But what I care most about is that deeper mission. And I think that as you look at your own work for creating, for publishing, for sharing, for marketing, don't lose sight of the experience you hope you create for yourself and the experience you hope you create for your ideal readers. Your author events, your Zoom calls, your social media don't have to be perfect. You have to get the core things right and try to lessen the simple mistakes. And you have to keep trying with it. At least that is what I'm telling myself. If you received my newsletter, saw the typo, and didn't unsubscribe, I want to thank you. And you can always reach me at at Dan Blank on social media. If you're curious about my newsletter and don't receive it, you can go to wegrowmedia.com/newsletter and sign up. You can find the rest of my work at wegrowmedia.com. And if you enjoyed this podcast or any other, please consider leaving a rating over on Apple Podcasts. All right. Thank you so much for listening until the end.